Okay, good morning. The weekly shiur, as always, from the Seches Megillah, is dedicated by Gary and Toby Greenstein in memory of their son, Yomi Yosef Menachem Ben Gershon. He grew up in the YAPC. And the weekly breakfast is sponsored by Bagel Munch, Lilui Nishmas Feiga Bas Chaim, and Shimon Ben Zaev. Their neshamas should all have an aliyah. Okay, we're doing Daf Gimel in Maseches Megillah today. We're starting three lines from the bottom on Daf Beis on the Beis. The Amar Rabbi Yirmiyah, Rabbi Yitamar, Rabbi Chia, Barava. So they said the following, Menatzbach, Sofim Amrum. Menatzbach is a Rashi Tevos for these letters, Memnun, Sadi, Fe, Chaf. These are all the tevos, these are all the letters that both have a regular form and a sophis form, a different form for the end of the word. So mem is, you know, the way it appears here in the middle of the word, but at the end it's sasim, it's all closed up, as we know, and the same is true for all the other letters. They have a middle form and an end form. And the Gemara here is saying, Rabbi Yirmiyah and perhaps possibly Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba are saying that this tradition or this style of writing these letters comes from certain Nevi'im. So Fim Amarum, Rashi says, Nevi'e Hadoros. The Nevi'im, through the generations, developed this form of writing. So Gemara now challenges that and says, that's hard to understand because it's not just a question of just style, it's of the calligraphy, but these actually have halachic implications. If you're writing a Sefer Torah, and you write the letter one way, it's kosher, and if you write the letter another way, it's not kosher. So it really matters. So the Gemara says, "V'tizra v'aksiv eilu ha-mitzvos." Doesn't the pasuk say "eilu ha-mitzvos," which we interpret to mean "she'ein navi rashayu chadish davar me'ata," that a navi is not allowed to change the halacha. A navi is not allowed to come up with new halachas. The Torah is says what it says, and that's the final word. A navi can't start revising mitzvos. And if the Nevi'im, if we're attributing the development of these formations of these letters to the later Nevi'im, that's a problem. How do you understand the kashrus of Sefer Torah using a newly developed calligraphy? The Ode, and furthermore, another reason why it's hard to believe that the Nevi'im developed these forms of the letters, Ha'amar Abichista, Mem V'samach Shabluchos B'nei Sayu Omdim. That there was a special nes in the Aseres HaDibros and the Luchos, that the Mem and the Samach, keep in mind the Luchos were engraved, right? The letters were engraved in the stone, but the Midrashim and the Gemara tells us that the engraving wasn't just, you know, an inch deep or a half an inch deep, it went all the way through. So that's easy for the letters that, you know, are not susim, are not fully encircled, but think about a Mem Sofis or a Samach. If it goes all the way through, how does the middle stay intact? So the Gemara tells us that there was a nes, a miracle, that these, the stone that formed the middle of the mem, or the samach, actually stayed and hovered in the middle. But that all assumes that there was such a form for the mem, that it was a mem sophis. And if what we're saying is true, that the Nevi'im were the ones who developed that mem sasim, so then this doesn't make any sense. How? Why would that have been benes? So the Gemara concedes in. Now, you're right. It's true. These forms of the letters were always there, even from the time of Matan Torah. Mahava havu, they existed. V'lohavu yadi, hai be'emtza teva v'hai besof teva. But it wasn't known which letters, let's, for example, take mem. The mem that's susum, that's fully encircled, it wasn't clear whether that was the one that goes at the end of the word or whether that was the one that goes at the middle of the word. And the same was true for all the other letters. We had two forms of each of these letters, but we weren't sure which was the middle form and which was the end of the word form. V'asut sofim, and these Nevi'im came, v'tiknu psuchim be'emtza, and they made the takana that psuchim be'emtza, this form was in the middle of the word, be'emtza teva v'sesumim besof teva, and the encircled form, for example, of the mem, went at the end of the word. So the Gemara then says, that doesn't really satisfy our question. Sof sof eilu ha-mitzvos she'ein navi asidu chadish davar me'ata. We still have to grapple with the problem that a navi is not allowed to make up a new halacha. And therefore, if the Nevi'im determined which form of the letter should be in the middle, which form of the letter should be at the end, That causes a problem now for Sifrei Torah that were in before then, or I should say for Sifrei Torah that were after them. We need to know the halacha before these Nevi'im came. So the Gemara takes a departs from that answer and says, Ela shachachum v'chazrum v'chazru v'yaskum. Rather, it's true. This tradition had always been there. It was always a correct way of doing it. But the Jewish people at some point in time lost the tradition. They forgot it. And these Nevi'im kind of retained the tradition, and they reenacted it or re-announced the way it should be.
At this point in time, were they still reading the Torah every week? Did that start later, or was that like from day one, like from the beginning?
That was there were a few variations of the Takana. One was Moshe Rabbeinu had one of the Takanas of reading it every week. I forgot how it developed. Moshe Rabbeinu had one, and then it was later Takana to read. Right. Maybe Monday, Thursday was Ezra, I think. So there were early traditions for going dating back from Moshe Rabbeinu to read it.
But saying that they
regularly
forgot it is almost like they had no Torah to even look back and see what it was.
So that's a good question. The Pnei Yoshua asks, what does this all mean? How does this make any sense? Just look at a Torah, look at the Tefillin. How could they have forgotten the tradition? So the Pnei Yoshua says that the truth is, it could be that they lost the tradition, and b'di'eved, the Pnei Yoshua says, that even if all of the letters are sesumim, meaning even if the sophist letters are in the middle of the word, b'di'eved, that's kosher. And so therefore, there might have been a loss of the tradition and still a retention of, you know, kosher tefillin and kosher Sefer Torah, and what these Nevi'im did was just set it back to the l'chatchila way. The proper way. But that's exactly right. Pnei Yoshua asked that question.
Does it have a Tosca that you can have a Mem
Sofit? I didn't see the Pnei Yoshua inside. I saw the Shara Mesiyan Baruch quoting the Pnei Yoshua. It sounded that way. I'm not 100% sure. Okay. Now, once we're quoting Rav Yirmiyah Vitem Rav Chia, we have another member from him. Vam Rav Yirmiyah Vitem Rav Chia Bar Abba, Targum Shel Torah Unkus Hager Amra. The Targum that we have, the Targum Unklus that we have, Unklus, the convert, Unklus was a famous Roman nobleman, and he converted. The Gemara tells us his whole story. So he was the one who wrote the Targum. And he wrote it, Mipi Rabbi Eliezer v'Rabbi Yoshua. He had a tradition from Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yoshua, what should be written in the Targum, and Unklus was the one who wrote it down. Targum Shel Nevi'im, the Targum that we have on the side of our Nevi'im, or at least one of them, is Yonasan ben Uziel Amro. Mipnei Chagai Zachariah Malachi, he wrote it based on a tradition he learned from Chagai Zachariah Malachi. The Marsha points out that Yonasan ben Uziel was not of the same generation of Chagai Zachariah Malachi, but it was a tradition from passed down through Rabbeim. And what happened when Yonasan ben Uziel wrote down the Targum that he had gotten as a tradition from Chagai Zachariah Malachi, v'nizda'azeah Eretz Yisrael arba meos parsa al arba meos parsa. At the time, the ground shook a great amount, arba meos parsa. Yatzasa baskol, and a heavenly voice came out, v'amra, and it said, mihu zeh shegilai sisrai levnei adam. Who is this that revealed my secrets to man, meaning the Targum of Yonasan ben Uziel had apparently revealed some heavy secrets that had been meant to be kept secret. Amad Yonasan ben Uziel al Raglov, so he stood up on his legs, ve'amar, and he said, Anihu shagalisi sisrecha l'vnei adam. I'm the one who revealed your secrets. Galui v'yadua l'fanecha, and it should be known to you, it's known to you, shlol chvodi asisi, I didn't do this for my own honor. I didn't do it for the honor of my parents. I did it for your honor, for you, Hashem's honor. So that there should not be machlokes among the Jewish people. Rashi says machlokes about how to understand these cryptic psukim in the Nevi'im. And he went a step further. V'od b'geish l'galus targum shoksuvim. And he was going to write down and reveal a targum for the Ksuvim, right? The Nevi'im separate from the Ksuvim. So Yatsa Bas Kol, and the heavenly voice came out, V'amr, and it said, whoa, it said to him, Dayecha, enough. My time, why was it enough? Why did the heavenly voice command Yonasan ben Uziel not to reveal these secrets, Mishum d'ispa beketz Mashiach, because, as Rashi points out, in the Targum that he would have written for Sefer Daniel, it would have contained the revelation of the time of Mashiach, and that's supposed to be kept secret, that he wasn't allowed to reveal. The Gemara now questions the assumption we had said above. The Targum Shel Torah Unklus Hager Amro, is it true that Unklus Hager was the one who wrote down or revealed the Targum of the Torah? V'amrav Ika Bar Avin, Amrav Chananel, Amrav, they all said in the name of Rav, Mai Dichsiv, what is the Pasuk in Nechemya referring to when it says, Vayikru'u Sefer Torah Sa'elokim, Mefurash V'shum Seichel V'avinu B'mikra? What is this pasuk referring to when it talks about reading the Torah and referring and revealing the pashat in the Torah and the people understanding it? So they darshan the pasuk as follows: Vayikru ba sefer Torah se'elokim. They read from the book or from the sefer of Hashem's Torah. Zem mikra. This refers to the plain Hebrew version that we have in Erech Hamashim. Mefurash, interpreted, zet targum. This refers to the targum in Aramaic. Vishum seichel, and revealing its understanding. Ewu ha-psukin, this refers to where the psukim are, how each verse, where we delineate the end of each verse. Viavinu b'mikra, ewu piske ta'amim, this refers to, as Rashi says, haniginos, the truck, the tune that we use when we read the psukim, ba'amriwa, and some say uhamisoros. This refers to the pronunciation, how you pronounce the words. So this is a challenge to what we said above, because here we have a pasuk in Nehemiah describing a targum, some sort of Aramaic translation of the Torah, and we said above that it was Unklus Hager, who lived much later, that promulgated or that issued the targum. So the Gemara answers similarly to what we answered above. Shachachum v'chazru v'yastum. There was a Targum. There was an Aramaic translation. It kind of got lost. There was kind of an underground tradition for it. And Unklus Hager was the one who reinvigorated. He was reestablished it, republished it. And that's why his Targum is known as Targum Unklus, even though it has its antecedents even earlier, even in, as referred to in the Pasuk in Nehemiah. So now the Gemara says, if you remember above, we said that when when Yonasan ben Uziel wanted to, or when he translated, or when he issued the Targum of the Nevi'im, so the ground shook. This was kind of a major apocalyptic moment. So the Gemara asks, Maishna doraisa dois dazea, vada nevi'is dazea. Why when Unklus issued his Targum, did the ground not shake? Whereas when Yonasan ben Uziel issued his Targum on the Nevi'im, the ground shook. So the Gemara answers, Doraisa Mifrasha Milsa. If you read through the Torah, if you read through the Psukim, generally you understand the Pasha Pshat. It could be that the Targum will add something and will help you understand it. But generally speaking, there's no great revelation with the Targum because the Torah can be understood at a basic level on its own. However, the Nevi, Ika Miwe de Mifreshan, Vika Miwe de Mistaman. When it comes to the Nevi'im, there are parts of the Nevi'im where it reads straight and it's easy to understand. However, there are parts of the Nevi'im, there are psukim in the Nevi'im, where it's absolutely incomprehensible without the Targum. What's an example of this? So the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Zechariah. Dechsiv, Bayomahu Yigadel Hamispeid Birushalayim, Kemispeid Hadar Dimon, Bibikas Megidon. On that day, the eulogies in Yerushalayim, the crying and the eulogy in Yerushalayim, will be like the eulogies of Dargimon Bebikas Megiddo. The Amar Rav Yosef, and Rav Yosef says, Il Moe Targuma Dehaikra, and if not for the Targum of this Pasuk, Lo Yadana Maika Amar, we wouldn't know what it is talking about. The reason we wouldn't know what it's talking about is because to talk about a misbit of Dardimon and Babikas Megiddon, there's no recorded hesbit of a Dardimon, someone named Dardimon who's giving a hesbit in Bikas Megiddon. It's just a mishkababble. It's hard to understand what this is talking about. And so the Targum clarifies in the following way. Beyumahu, on that day, Yaski Mispadab Yerushalayim, the eulogies will be said in Yerushalayim, Kemispada Da'ach, and it splits now Dardimon Bebigas Megidon into two separate things. It's referring to two completely separate historical occurrences. Number one is Kemispada Da'achav Bar Amri, the Kotel Yasei Hadardimon Ben Tevardimon Bar Amos Gilad. So one's referring to the misbah, the hesped for Achav. Achav was one of the malachim of Yisrael, of the kingdom of Israel. He was a bad guy. And he died in a war against Aram, that he had waged against Aram. He died in a remote Gilad. And so when the Pasuk refers to a hesped of Dardimon, it's referring to this hesped, the hesped that Dardimon gave for Achav in Ramos Gilad. And then when the Pasuk refers to a hesped in Bebikas Megidon, that's referring to a separate occurrence, Ukumispada Diyoshia Bar Amon de Katal Yase Paro Chagira Bebikas Megiddo. That's referring to the hesped for Yoshia. Yoshia is what we talk about on Tisha B'Av every year, is the famous story with Yoshia, was the king, and he had overseen some level of tshuva. He had reinvigorated the observances among the people. People were doing well. The spiritual level of the nation was going up. And so he thought everything was great. And then there was Paro Necho in Mitzrayim. He wanted to wage war against the Assyrians up north. And he asked Yoshia if he could cross through the land. And Yoshia knew that the Pasuk said, Cherev lo yavar ba'artzechem, that at a time when Klal Yisrael is doing the mitzvos, there won't be any armies going through the land. And Yoshia was convinced that Klal Yisrael was up to that level, and so he could firmly say to Paro Necho, don't bring your arms through Eretz Yisrael. But Yirmiyahu HaNavi knew better. He knew that really, even though things were starting to get a little better, still there was a lot of hidden Avodah Zarah. And so he warned Yoshia not to do this, not to stop Paro Necho from going through Eretz Yisrael. Yoshia ignored him. And then the end of the story was Yoshia was killed by Paro Necho as part of this whole whatever ensued. And that happened in Bebikas Megiddo. And so that's the second reference in that pasuk. Bebikas Megiddo, that was the hesped for Achav, for Yoshia, who had overseen that that situation. Okay. Now the Gemara quotes a pasuk in Daniel, Veraisi ani Daniel levadi asamara v'anashim asher yo imi. So Daniel, let's read the rest of the pasuk. V'anashim asher yo imi lo ra'u asamara, aval charada gedola nafu aleim v'yivruchu behechbe. So the pasuk says that Daniel is relating the fact that he saw some sort of vision of what was going to happen. And the people that were with him, he says, we'll explain what that means, didn't see the vision, but they all of a sudden became very nervous, and they ran away and hid. So the Gemara says, "My ninu anashim, who were these people that were with Daniel that got nervous and ran away and hid? Amar av Yirmiya v'item rav Yechia bar Abba, ze Chagai Zacharia u'malachi." These were the three Nevi'im, Chagai Zacharia u'malachi. They were contemporaries of Daniel. And Daniel was saying, "Inhu adifi minei, v'ihu adif minayu." They, you, Chagai Zacharia Malachi, are better than me in some respects, but I'm better than you in some respects. I'm better than them in some respects. How's that? "Inhu adifi minei, de'inhu nevi'i, v'ihu lav navi." You, Chagai Zacharia Malachi, are on a higher level than me, Daniel, because you are nevi'im. And I am not a Navi, right? Daniel is one of the Ksuvim, because he wasn't a Navi. Chagai Zacharia Malachi are all in Treyasar, they were Nevi'im. So he's saying, you were Nevi'im, you related the word of Hashem to Klal Yisrael, you were Nevi'im, but I'm not a Navi. However, Ihu Adif Minayu, but I am on a higher level than you, apparently. Di'ihu Chaza Vinu Lo Chazu, because on this occasion, I saw this Mara, I saw this vision, this Nevuah, and you didn't. You, Chagai Zacharia Malachi, didn't see it. So the Gemara then asks, V'chimi Akar Dugol Chazu, if it's true that Chagai Zacharia Malachi didn't see this vision, my taima iv isu, Why did they get nervous? Why did they get scared? The pasuk says that even though they didn't scare, there was a charada gadola that afal aleihem. There was a great fear that fell upon them. So how did that happen? If they saw the vision, you could understand why they would be terrified by it. But they didn't even see the vision. So the Gemara answers, afagav di'inhu lo chazu. The Gemara says that even though they didn't see, mazlaihu chazu. Their mazalim, Rashi says, sar shel kodam umal. Their mazal, their malach, whatever that means, their spiritual equivalent saw it, saw this vision. Amar Ravina, Ravina says, shmamina, we see from this, haiman demivis, someone who gets scared, afagav di'u lo chazi. Even though he didn't see anything, he's maybe referring to someone who's just irrationally nervous about something. He doesn't know why he's upset. Mazali chazi. It could be because his mazal, his, whatever that means, his spiritual equivalent, his mazal, his sar, saw this, some vision, and that caused him to get scared. So Maita Kante, what should he do? Likre Kriya Shema. He should read Kriya Shema, and that'll fix his nervousness. V'kayim b'makam atinofes. And if he's in a dirty place where it's usher to say Kriya Shema, so Linshuf Miduchte Arba Garmide, he should move 4 amos from that area, and then he would be able to say Kriya Shema. Vilo, and if he's not able to move for whatever reason, he can't say Kriya Shema, he's all nervous, what should he do? Lema Hachi, he should say the following, Iza Debeitabchi Shemena Minai. As if to, it's like saying there's fatter goats out there. I guess it's a way of kind of talking back to the whoever's causing this nervousness, whatever spiritual forces are causing this nervousness, to say, go bother someone else. There are other fatter goats in the marketplace. Leave me alone. Okay, that ends that section. Now we get back to a drusha that we had started with on Beis Amud Beis. Specifically a drasha in the Megillah, where we say that the Megillah is read called Medina, Medina, Ir Va'ir, Mishpacha, Mishpacha. So the Gemara, we had interpreted Medina, Medina, and Ir, referring to the various types of cities, walled cities, not walled cities, etc. So the Gemara says, V'hashta da'amris Medina, Medina, V'ir Va'ir, Udrasha. Now that we've interpreted Medina, Medina for a drasha, and Ir Va'ir, Udrasha, Mishpacha, Mishpacha, Lamayasa. What is the pasuk referring to when it says mishpacha u'mishpacha, each family? Amar Rav Yosi bar Chanina, he says, lahavi mishpachos kuhuna u'levia, it's specifically including the families of the Kohanim and the Leviim. Why? Shemevatlin avodasan u'boing l'shmoa mikra Megillah. To teach that Megillah is so important that even the Kohanim and the Leviim who are on duty in the Beis Hamikdash should be mevatel the avoda, should stop, should not do the avoda in favor of mikra Megillah.
What about osik mitzvah, patur min mitzvah?
So what about osik mitzvah, patur min mitzvah? Here we learn that Megillah takes precedence over that, and we'll see it affects Talmud Torah, it affects other all sorts of things. Mikra is on a higher level, as the Gemara is going to flesh it out, but what makes mikra Megillah on a higher level than a lot of other things is the fact that it's persume nisa, that we attribute extra importance to the mitzvah of publicizing the nes. We need full participation for that, and so that kind of trumps other considerations. One question that the Rishonim ask here is, why can't you have it both ways, right? Why do you need to be mevatel the avod, the yer mikra Megillah? How long does it take to do the Megillah? When Yitzweitz does the Megillah, it doesn't take very long at all.
22
minutes, okay. So you could do the
I want to know if this is the deal that Yitzweitz gets into every one of the revenge.
So you could do both. How long is the avoda take? They're not doing the avoda all day, right? You need to bring you the carbon, tamid shel shachar, carbon tamid shel ben arbayim, whatever it is.
I would think that we could split it. Like, you don't have to read the Megillah at a specific, like right at as soon as Purim starts.
So that's the answer. So if you look at the top Tosfos here, Tosfos answers it by saying that there was an importance attached to reading the Megillah in the morning as soon as possible with everyone else. The assumption Tosfos is making is that the public Megillah reading was done first thing in the morning, because that's when people wake up, and you're going to do it first, right? Zrizim Makdimim, and you don't want to mitzvah bo yadchach tach mitzvah. You want to do the mitzvah first thing in the morning. And so that begs the question then, well, even so, why don't the Kohanim do their karbanos and they'll just have a later minyan?
Right.
So Tosfos says, Yeshomer de tov likrosim atzibur mishum dave tvei pirsuma yinisa. That there's there's some utility to having everyone do it together, to doing it in one big minyan first thing in the morning. Don't have the Kohanim do a side breakaway minyan later on, because Pirsuma Yinisa demands that everyone be there, there be as much of an audience as possible.
We're going to ask for Hashkama.
This is saying everyone should go to Hashkama minyan, I guess.
Now, when you think of it, you bring Kavana, the Kohanim of Vim are bringing Kavanas for the people, and if all the people are hearing Megillah, then there's no one there to bring the Kavanas.
Well, the Karban Tamid is
not. Yeah, right, it was a Karban Shel Tzibur. I mean, there were these Namados, we learned that in Tainus, that there were Yisrael, and they were set aside to kind of. Yeah, be involved in that way, but Tosfos' assumption here is that everyone should join first thing at the big minyan in the morning, and then Tosfos just clarifies at the beginning of the Tosfos that when we say mevatlin karbanos l'shma mikra megillah, it doesn't mean that we don't do the karbanos, even though that sounds like a mevatlin. It just means push it off. Just right. There's a ritva which quotes a minority opinion that the Gemara here means to say that mevatlin, that the Kohanim, once they're involved in the avoda, for some reason there's no mikra megillah for them. But that's a minority opinion. Most of the Rishonim kind of line up with the Tosfos and say mevatlin here just means push it off a little. Fine. But anyway, in any event, that's what we learn from mishpacha. Mishpacha, it refers to the mishpacha, so the Kohanim Levim, as if to say that they should set aside the avoda and do mikra megillah first thing, and we support this by quoting from Rav the Amar Rav Yudah Merav Kohanim b'avodasam ve'uvim beduchanan v'Yisrael v'mamadon kulam mevatlin avodasan u'boing lishma mikra megillah. All the Kohanim who are normally doing the avoda, the Levim who are normally doing their business in the Beis Hamikdash, even the Yisraelim who are the ones who are on the Maimid on that day, as we learned in Maseches Tanis, so they all set aside what they need to do in order to hear Mikra Megillah first. Tanya Namiachi is consistent with all this. We have a Braisa, Kohanim Bavodasan, Levim Beduchanam, V'Yisrael Ma'amadan, Kulan Mevatlin Avodasan, Uvang Lishma Mikra Megillah. Then the Gemara goes further and says, "Mikan samchu shel beis Rebbe shemevatlin Talmud Torah ubang l'shma mikra megillah." So from the fact that we learn that the Kohanim set aside the avoda to do mikra megillah, so you can extrapolate from that Talmud Torah is also subservient to mikra megillah. You push that aside and you do come to your megillah reading. How do we know that? Kal v'chomer me'avoda. We learn that from a kal v'chomer. Uma avoda shi chamura. The avoda is very, very important, right? It's a big mitzvah to do the avoda. And yet, mevatlinan, we set it aside in order to read the Megillah. So, Talmud Torah lo kol shekein. So, shouldn't you also set aside Talmud Torah in order to hear the Mikra Megillah? And now what the Gemara is going to do is it's going to get into a side discussion and challenge that and say, is it really true that the avoda is more chamor than Talmud Torah? Maybe Talmud Torah is more chamor. And it challenges it with this interesting, from an interesting source. The Gemara asks, Avoda chamura mi Talmud Torah? Is it really true that avoda is more chamor than Talmud Torah? V'aksiv, don't we have a pasuk that says in Yoshua after the battle in Yericho, Yoshua meets a malach. Vayhi bios Yoshua b'Yericho, vayisa ina vayar, v'inei isho meid l'negdo. So Yoshua lifts up his eyes, and he sees there's a man there. The man there is a malach. Vayishtachu, and he bows down to him. The Gemara says, Vehichi avinachi. How did he do this? How did he greet the man? V'amar Rav Yoshua ben Levi, Rav Yoshua doesn't Rav Yoshua ben Levi teach us, Asru adam shitein shalom l'chaveru balayla, that it's forbidden for a person to say hello to his friend at night, chayshinan shema sheidhu, because we're afraid that maybe he's a shade. Tosfos makes it very clear here that, he quotes the Riva, that this is only out in the countryside. If you're in a city where people are around, you could pretty much assume that if your friend greets you, he's your friend and not a shade disguised. What we're talking here is about a person who's out in the wilderness, and it's the middle of the night, and I guess it's kind of very scary out there. And so you have to be worried that even a guy that looks like your friend, even a guy that looks like an innocent, normal human being, might be a shade who's out to get you. So the Gemara answers... the Tosfos is a great Tosfos. It's a fascinating Tosfos. How does Tosfos prove that that's the case? Because Tosfos says, "Din Vokain, Adam Shamar Lanu Balayla Ba'ir Kisvu Gelu Ish Teichi Kasvinan." We have a halacha that if a person in Gittin, that if a person tells you to write a get for his wife, you can write a get for his wife. But Tosfos says, if you had to assume that anyone who appears to you at night might be a shade, shouldn't you have to worry that the person who's telling you to write a get for his wife is not really that guy? And if you write a get for him, and he's telling you to write a get for his wife, and it's nighttime, if it's really his a shade and not him, it's telling you to write a get, and you go and write a get, give the get to his wife, right, as a shliach, you're going to cause a big problem here. The wife's going to think she's divorced, but she's not really divorced because the husband never authorized the get to be written, because who authorized the get to be written? A shade. So Tosfos says, from the fact that the Gemara is not concerned about that, it proves that it must be that our concern that the person appearing to you at night is a shade is only referring to a very rare circumstance where you're out far away from the city in the wilderness. But in the normal circumstance where you're in the city among inhabited area where there are people and the husband comes to you and authorizes the guest to be written, you could pretty much assume that he's the guy.
How do we know for sure that it's the husband?
How do we know? So the truth is in Hilchos Gittin, you need Edei Hakara. You need witnesses that tell you that this is the man. When we do a get at the Beis Din, we will, if the person brings a friend with them, we'll ask the person, we'll ask the friend to identify him. We rely nowadays on a driver's license, because the driver's license is government issued, is a photo ID, so we rely on that.
You can make fake ones.
You can make fake ones, but we assume, generally speaking, that a driver's license as presented is not fake. The question really is, does a shade carry a driver's license?
Oh.
I don't know the answer to that one.
Wasn't Yeshua
undocumented alien? They get him out free.
What was that?
Wasn't Yeshua in Yericho?
I guess he was outside in the outskirts, and there had just been a battle, so he was kind of out in the wilderness, far away from the city. Good question. Okay. So the Gemara says, "Chayshin and Shem Shade." Who? So the answer is, "Shiny Hasam." You didn't have to. Yeshua didn't have to worry about that. Da'amrolei Kani Sar Tzva Hashem, because the person, or what appeared to be a person, announced that he is a malach. He says, "Ani svar tzva Hashem." So the Gemara says, "V'duma mashakri." What's to say that this shade didn't just lie? The Gemara says, "We have a tradition, gemiri de'lo mafki shem shemayim levato." We have a tradition that shadim don't say Hashem's name in vain. And so Yeshua was able to, that's a helpful tradition, Yeshua was able to rely on that and know that he wasn't a shade. Okay. But here's the important part of the story. So Amar Lo, so this Malach, who we know now is not a shade, this Malach said, Emish, the other day, meaning...
Last night,
thank you. Last night, Bitaltem Tamid Shel Bein Arabayim. You, meaning Klal Yisrael, didn't bring the Tamid Shel Bein Arabayim. Remember, they're in the midst of all these battles, wars, right? This was just after the Battle of Yericho. So he said, yeah, last night you didn't bring the Talmud Shel Bein Arabayim. He's giving a mussar. Ve'achshav bitaltem Talmud Torah. And now, as a result of all your battles, you didn't learn Torah. Tosfos points out, why is it that they didn't bring the Talmud Shel Bein Arabayim just because they were at war? The Kohanim weren't waging war. The Kohanim could have, where the Mishkan was, the Kohanim could have brought the Talmud, and the Jews could have been waging war. So Tosfos explains that it's because the Aron was out to war with the people. Hmm. And you can't bring the Karbanos if the Aron's not there. Hmm. So that's the Musar that this Malach is giving to Yoshua. First you missed the Talmud Shel Bein Arabayim, and now you're not learning. What's going on? So Amar Lo, al Iza Man Basa. So Yoshua said to him, which one are you complaining about? Are you upset about the fact that we didn't bring the Karban, or are you upset about the fact that we didn't learn Torah? So Amar Lo, Ata Basi. The pasuk says, "Vayomer lo ki ani saritz ve'Hashem atavasi." I'm coming now. The Gemara is interpreting that to say atavasi. I'm coming about the current problem. Meaning, it's true. Last night I complained that you didn't bring the karban, but what I'm complaining about is the current problem, which is that you didn't learn Talmud Torah. And so therefore Yoshua responded miyad vayalan Yoshua balayla hahu besoch haimek. The pasuk says that Yoshua slept that night in the valley. Amar Rav Yochanan, Rav Yochanan interprets this to mean not just the pashup shot that he slept in the valley, but rather malame, this teaches us shalon ba'umka shalacha, that Yoshua learned halacha, learned ba'umka shalacha, he learned be'iyun. He learned halacha as a result of the exhortation that the Malach had given.
Isn't Yoshua's question a little odd? You know, Malach comes to you and says you did two bad things. Like, which one are you coming for? Like you, that's a little.
Yeah, it sounds like off the cuff. I don't. Maybe he was asking him that because he wanted to know which one should I correct, or like which where should my priority be. Which is relevant to kind of the Shach Levitar you hear, because we're trying to figure out which is more important, Talmud Torah or Avoda, right? So, okay, so that's one proof, that's one reason why we're questioning this assumption that the Avoda is more important than Talmud Torah. Maybe that's not true. Here we see apparently the Malach thought Talmud Torah was more important than Avoda. That's what he was exhorting him about. And second, or furthermore, V'amar Rav Shmuel Bar Unya, Gadol Talmud Torah Yosher Me'akravas Tmidim, it seems to be that Talmud Torah is more important. But not furthermore, this is a continuation. So we see from this that Gadol Talmud Torah Yosher Me'akravas Tmidim Shenemar Ata Basi, from the fact that the Malach was concerned more about the Talmud Torah than the Akravas Tmidim. So this is a question, because we had assumed before a Kal V'chomer from the Avoda, right? We said the fact that Mikra Megillah trumps Avoda, so teaches you all the more so, of course, Mikra Megillah is going to trump Talmud Torah. But now we see maybe that shouldn't be true, because Talmud Torah might be more important than the Avoda. So the Gemara answer is, Lo kashya hadarabim v'hadiyachid. The case of Yoshua's Talmud Torah was talking about Yoshua teaching the people. That was Talmud Torah derabim, Talmud Torah that affected the entire nation, the rabim. Whereas our halacha is talking about Talmud Torah d'yachid. And so there's nothing here that shows us that Talmud Torah of a Yachid is more important than the Avoda, and therefore the Kal V'chomer will work. If the Avoda is trumped by Mikra Megillah, so all the more so an individual's Talmud Torah, Mitzvah Torah and Torah, will be trumped by the Avoda. So now the Gemara challenges and says, is it really true the Yachid Kal? Is it really true that an individual's Talmud Torah is Kal, is on a lower level, and therefore should be overridden by Megillah? Maybe, in fact, Talmud Torah should be more important than Megillah. V'atanan, don't we have a Mishnah that says in Moed Katan, Nashim b'moed ma'anos aval lo metapchos. So back then they had all sorts of nihugim of avelos that we don't have nowadays, of these women who would come to the funerals and they would do all sorts of crying and sounds and banging and stuff like that as a way of showing their distress. So they would only do that on days that weren't Yomim Tovim, or weren't days of special celebration. But on certain Yomim Tovim, like we'll see in a moment, Rosh Chodesh, Chanukah, Purim, etc., they wouldn't do some of these Nihugim. So the Mishnah says that Nashim on Moed, on Chol Moed, if you're having a funeral on Chol Moed, Ma'anos Avalom Metapchos. So ma'anos means that they would speak out these hespedim, they would kind of cry out, but they wouldn't do metapchos. Metapchos would be banging on their chests. So you would do the lower level of crying out, but you wouldn't do the higher level of banging your chests on chomoy. Rabbi Shmuel Omer, im hayu smuchos lumita metapchos. If they were close to the coffin, then they would do the higher level, they would bang on their chests. Furthermore, Barashay Chadashim and Rosh Chodesh, Bechanuk uBepurim, on all these days, Ma'anos uMetapchos Bazeu Bazeh, they would do both the calling out and they would do the beating of the chest, but they wouldn't do the very high level of Avalo Mekananos, they wouldn't do the responsive kind of call and response type of crying. That they wouldn't do on Rosh Chodesh and Chanukah on Purim. They would do that on a Chol. So again, on a Chol day, they would do all three. They would do the call and response, they would do the banging on the chest, and they would do the calling out. On Moed, they would only do the calling out, and on Rosh Chodesh and Chanukah and Purim, they would do the calling out and the beating of the chest, but they wouldn't do the call and response. V'amar Rava Bar Huna, Ein Moed Bifnei Talmud Chacham. If it came to a Talmud Chacham, who died on Chol Moed, and they were doing the burial on Chol Moed, so then these restrictions are set aside, and Kol Shekein Chanukah Purim, the restrictions are set aside for a Talmud Chacham on Chanukah Upurim. So this appears to show that Limud HaTorah, Talmud Torah, is more important than Purim, in a sense. This is why we're challenging our assumption that that Purim should override Talmud Torah, right? Again, we said before that Purim, that Mikra Megillah, should override Talmud Torah, but here we see a source that seems to indicate that Talmud Torah on some level is more important than Purim, because the restrictions on the Nihuge Avelos are set aside in favor of Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara now makes...
Because you can bury on Purim.
You could bury on Purim regardless. No, the proof is that the Talmud Chacham, that if, even though normally on Purim you couldn't do some of these Nihuge Avelos, if you're burying a Talmud Chacham, you can do the Nihuge Avelos. So that shows that a Talmud Chacham, that Limud HaTorah is the Havmin here, trumps Purim. Meaning normally things that might be prohibited on Purim are permitted on Purim when it comes to Talmud Torah. That's the question. So the Gemara now makes an important distinction and says, no, you're getting it wrong. Kavod HaTorah Kamris. Or I should say, Kavod HaTorah Kamris, you're talking about Kavod HaTorah, Kavod HaTorah D'yachid Chamur. Talmud Torah D'yachid Kal. You have to distinguish between Kavod HaTorah and Talmud Torah. The basic mitzvah to learn Torah, that is on a lower level, and that's trumped by Mikra Megillah. But Kavod HaTorah, to give Kavod to a Talmud Chacham, that's much more important. That will trump some of the restrictions of Purim. So you have to kind of, there's a whole hierarchy here that we're talking about. Okay. Amar Rava, Pshita li'avodo mikra megillah adif, mid Rav Yosef Charnina. So we understand that when it comes to a contest between avoda and mikra megillah, mikra megillah is going to be more important based on what we learned before from Rav Yosef Charnina, that mikra megillah trumps the avoda. They won't do the avoda, or they'll delay the avoda in order for to do Mikra Megillah. Talmud Torah Mikra Megillah, Mikra Megillah Adif. When it comes to the Samchus of Beis Rebbe, as we said above, in the house of Rebbe, they would set aside Talmud Torah in order to do Mikra Megillah, so we understand that. I understand that, says Rava. Talmud Torah Umeis Mitzvah, Meis Mitzvah Adif. Now he introduces a new one, and he says, when it comes to the contest between Talmud Torah, the mitzvah of learning Torah, or a meis mitzvah, you find a dead body and you need to bury it, meis mitzvah trumps. There's a clear brisa that says that you set aside Talmud Torah, you pick yourself up from the beis medrash and go outside and bury the base, the meis, where you need to do so. Avoda umeis mitzvah, meis mitzvah adif. He now says that if you have a contest between, we have to weigh avoda, doing the avoda in the Beis Mikdash, or doing a meis, bearing a meis mitzvah, which one goes first? Meis mitzvah adif mi la'achoso, from the pasuk which says la'achoso. This is a pasuk that comes up in the halachos of nazirus. Keep in mind, a nazir has similar restrictions to a kohen in terms of tumah. A nazir can't become tumah, and a kohen can't become tumah normally. D'tanya, let's see how that plays out. D'tanya, the brisa says la'achoso. The pasuk says that a nazir cannot become tamei to his sister. Ma tamei omer harei shai hoich lishchot es pischo umal v'lamo as bino v'shamish emes lo meis yachol yitame amris lo yitama. So someone who's going to do something to shecht his karm pesach or to do miwa for his son, he hears that someone died, So you might think that he should become tame for that. Amris lo yitama. So the pasuk says you should not become tame. I think we're talking about a nazir. Yachol kishem shenu matame la'achoso. Kachenu matame l'meis mitzvah. You might think that just like he can't become tame for his sister, he should not become tame for a meis mitzvah. Tamar lomar u'achoso. Achoso hu deinu matame ava matame l'meis mitzvah. For his sister, he shouldn't become tame, but he should become tame for a meis mitzvah. Meaning, wherever he is faced with the opportunity to bury a meis mitzvah, that opportunity trumps his naziris, and he should become tame. Fine. By Rava, mikram megillah o meis mitzvah hayminayu adif. Which one is more important? Mikram Megillah or Meis Mitzvah? If you have the opportunity to read Megillah or you have the opportunity to bury Meis Mitzvah, which one should take precedence? So he answers his own question. Mikram Megillah Adif Mishum Pirsumei Nisa. As we said before, Mikram Megillah has this extra quality in that it's in order to publicize the miracle. So maybe Mikram Megillah should trump. O Dilma Meis Mitzvah Adif. Or maybe Meis Mitzvah should take precedence Mishum Kavod Abrios, because that is that relates to the basic dignity of a human being, and therefore maybe that's more important. Basar debaya hader pashta. So after he asked the question, he answered it. What's the answer? Meis mitzvah adif. Meis mitzvah takes precedence over pirsumei nisa. Kavod abrios is more important than pirsumei nisa, and therefore meis mitzvah takes precedence over mikra megillah. Domar mar. Gadol kavod abrios shadochas lo saaseh shebetorah. Kavod abrios is the most important thing. It's even docha lo saseh.
Is it one deraisa, one derabanan?
Yes, but as we've seen, that doesn't necessarily answer the question, because karbanos is deraisa, mikra megillah is only derabanan, and yet the quality of presumei nisa that's inherent in mikra megillah makes it trump the avoda. Okay. Certainly in terms of if you have both, which do you do first? Right. Okay. Now we finish that discussion, and we're back to the discussions of the various types of cities and which days we read it, Yud Dalet or Tesvav. Remember, a walled city, Mimos Yoshua Benun, you read on the 15th. Everywhere else you read on the 14th, typically. I shouldn't say that. There were some, and then the small villages where they didn't have the Megillah and they had to go into the cities, they would be Makdim and Yom HaKnisa. They would read it on the market days. So Gufa. Back to an original statement we read earlier from Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Gufa, I'm Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Krach v'kol ha-samach lo v'kol ha-nira imo nidon k'krach. So when you're deciding what's considered a walled city, it's not just the walled city, but it's also the area right next to the walled city and anywhere you could see from the walled city. So Tana, we have a braisa. Samach afa pishenu nira, nira afa pishenu samach. Either one of these will qualify. Either it's being right next to the walled city, or it being seen from the walled city. So Bishlan Nira Afavishenu Samach, I can understand the situation of you being able to see it, even though it might not be right next to it. Mishakas Lakagon Yasva Baroshahar, where the place we're looking to is on the top of a mountain, so you can be in the walled city, and it's quite a hike off up the mountain, so it's not Samachla, but it's visible because it's at the top of the mountain. You just look up. What's the situation where a place is right next to the walled city, but you can't see it? Normally, you just look over the wall. You can see a place right next to it. In a situation where the place is down in a valley, so it's not so easy to see it. If you have a walled city, especially if there's a wall around it, and then there's a place kind of downhill from there, you just look straight. You won't see it. You'd have to kind of look over the wall in a certain angle, and we then can see it. So this is Bryce is telling you that that's considered part of the walled city as well. V'om Rav Yeshua ben Levi, krach sheyashav uvasof hukaf nidon kekfar. So interestingly, some of the halachos of what's considered a walled city for purposes of Mikra Megillah are going to be derived from what's considered a walled city with respect to the halachos of Batei Arechoma, because that's the Torah source for the idea, or that's the place in the Torah where the Torah distinguishes between walled cities and unwalled cities. So we're going to use some psukim from that. So Rav Shulman Levi says here, a krach sheyashav uvasof hukaf, a place that was inhabited, that had a population, and then later got surrounded by a wall, nidon kekfar, that's not considered a walled city. It has to have been originally planned in a way that was the walled city. So it was walled and then the people settled it. My time, how do we know? The pasuk referring to a Bate Arichoma refers to this type of Arichoma. Shahukav uvasof yashav velosh yashav uvasof hukav. That language, the pasuk, kiyimkor base moshav Arichoma, Rashi says, it's a base moshav shel Arichoma. A place that just the construct of the language here, Rashi is saying, the Gemara is saying, implies that it was first walled and then the people settled in it. But not that the people settled in it and it was then walled. Vamar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi, Yehoshua ben Levi says, Krach she'in bo asara batlanim nidon kikfar. Another requirement for it to be considered an old walled city is that it needs to have asara batlanim, 10 people who regularly sit and learn Torah that don't have jobs, that are sitting in kolel in that city. That is the definition of a city, and they have to have that in order for it to qualify here. My kamash malan, why are you teaching me that? Tanina, we already know that from the following. Ezo hi ir gadoa. What's considered an ir gadoa? Kol sheish ba asar batlanim. Pachos mikan har ezek far. We already have a brisa that teaches us this halacha, that in order for it to be considered a city, it has to have 10 people who are learning Torah. That makes it a city. So the Gemara answer is krachet shrichalei afagav demikli lei malma. It needed to teach this halacha, even though we learned that halacha previously in another context, it needs to say it explicitly here in the context of a krach, because a krach is a place where people visit it regularly. And so you might think that if there are people visiting it regularly, and some of those people sit and learn Torah on a temporary basis in the city, and at any given point in time there are 10 people sitting and learning Torah, that would qualify it. So it's coming to teach you that's not the case. It needs to be 10 permanent residents who are always sitting and learning. That's what makes it a krach. And only then would you read it on the 15th. Gam Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, krach shecharav uvasof yashav nidon kekrach. Another halacha he says is that if it's a walled city and then it gets destroyed and then re-inhabited, it's considered a walled city. So the Gemara clarifies, my charav, what does this mean, destroyed? Ilemo charvu chomosav, that it's walls came down, the walls were destroyed. Yashav in lo yashav lo. The way Rabbi Yeshua Malevi formulated his halacha, it made it sound as if the walls come down, then only if it's inhabited again does it have the status of a walled city. But that's not true. Vatanya Rabbi Lazar Rav Yossi Omer, Asher lo choma afa pish en lo achshav vayo kodom lachem. We know the halacha is that as long as there were once walls, even if there are no walls now, across the board, at that point it's going to be considered a walled city, even if it's not inhabited. Whereas Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi's halacha made it sound as if only if you re-inhabit it is it considered a walled city. Ela mai charav, so it clarifies, what is Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what did Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi mean when he said destroyed? Shacharav me'asar batlanim, that it ceased to be a host for a kolel of people learning, that there weren't 10 people learning there full time. And that's what he means to say. If there was a walled city that at one point had asara batlan and had 10 people learning, and then it ceases to have 10 people learning, it's not going to be considered a walled city until there's a reinstatement of that status, until there are 10 people learning again. And at that point, it will be considered a walled city for purposes of reading the Megillah on the 15th.
Okay.
Are you going to 10 people? How many people walked?